mercy to our young and respect to our elders. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also said, "Whoever honors an elderly person, Allah will appoint one to honor them in their old age." This is not just about honoring and respecting, it's about sowing seeds for our own future, the future that we cannot run away from. The way we treat the elderly today is how we will be treated tomorrow. From our childhood, we kept hearing stories of our grandmothers or the grandmothers as the characters of the stories who were telling the life lessons and were transferring the messages towards the new generations. They carried the family's history, they remembered wars, famines, miracles, and transformations. Sa'di reminds us, an old man may walk slowly, but his words often arrive faster at the truth. To disrespect that is not just unkind, it is ignorant. We lose so much wisdom by silencing, ignoring, or even isolating the elderly. Today, in many societies, especially urbanized ones, elders are left alone in nursing homes. They're being ignored in family decisions, or even treated as a burden. But in the Islamic model of the extended family, the elderly were protected and honored. They were consulted, their presence brought barakah or blessing to the household. As our Prophet had said, "Blessing descends with the presence of the elderly among you." In Shia tradition, this is emphasized in the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, who would stand up for elderly people in public, serving them food himself and ensure they were not humiliated in need. We're going to talk about this matter and the way we have to be careful of the elderly people, of those with much of the experience, with those of the great life lessons, after a very short break.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back. This is For a Better Life. So what does respect look like in practices? Let me name just five powerful ways of showing our respect towards the elderly people. Listening patiently, even if this story is repeated for the 10th time, it is not about this story. It's about the soul behind it. Now, for those young people who are hearing stories, who are hearing my voice right now, and have grandmas and grandpas who keep telling them stories, it wouldn't hurt us to just respect the soul behind a story and a person who is transferring that much of knowledge and wisdom towards us. And the same person who is showing care. When we are young, we are in need of the other people caring about us. When we are children, more specifically, we want others to look at us. And now those people are devoting their time to transfer their knowledge and stories and experiences with us. Try to show your care, show the way you are listening, and be patient. The other way can be using gentle language. It has been advised to us that we should never raise our voice, even in disagreement. The Prophet never shouted at elders, even those who rejected him. And also, we can and we have to offer physical help, carrying bags, opening doors, offering seats, small acts, but with big meanings. Consulting them, asking for advice, it doesn't matter if you take it, it matters that you asked. And the last, not the least, praying for them. Especially if your parents or grandparents have passed away, Dua for one's elder is a sign of humility and loyalty. The Quran says, "And your Lord has decreed that you worship none but Him, and that you be good to parents. If one or both of them reach old age while with you, do not say to them even, 'Uff.'" It means do not even show your disrespect with the smallest act towards them. And do not repel them, but speak to them in a noble way. Even if a sigh of annoyance is too much in the eyes of Allah. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam in his dua wrote, "The right of your mother is that you know she carried you and suffered to give you life. And the right of your father is that you know he is your root. Without him, you would not be." So beyond the social rules, honoring the elderly is an act of ibadah. It's a way of worship. Every time we help an old neighbor across the street, or we speak kindly to one aging uncle, or we simply visit our grandmothers just to sit with her, we are doing something Allah sees as precious. Our Prophet had said, "When a young person honors an elder for the sake of his age, Allah will create someone to honor him in his old age." So old age is not a curse. It's a blessing in disguise. A nation that forgets its elders forgets its roots. A soul that despises wrinkles will find no beauty in its own journey. Let us remember that one day we too will slow down. We too will forget names, drop things, and long for company. Let us build a society where elders are not being ashamed, but they are rather respected, included, and loved. As Sa'di says, "Do not kick away the ladder once you've climbed it. One day, you'll need it again." O Allah, bless our elders, grant them health, peace, and dignity. Forgive those who have passed, and increase us in mercy towards those still with us. Make us from those who honors age and are honored in age. And never let us become proud in youth or ungrateful in strength. That was all for today's For Abadah Life. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is a feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the holy prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Mir Baghiri. Please stay tuned.
Thank you.
پیروزی قطعی است، وعده خداست. پیروزی در گروه امکانات نیست، پیروزی ناشی از سنت خداست، نصرت خداست.
Victory for the Islamic Iranian Front is a certainty, since this is the promise of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Victory is not only limited to military weapons or facilities. It very much depends on our power of trust in Allah. Victory against the enemies of Islam has roots in the help of Allah. The war against falsehood will be won by Muslims not because we are militarily strong, but because we depend on Allah and the Ahlul Bayt. Imam al-Mahdi is protecting the camp of truth, and he is the direct representative of Allah on earth. This war paves the way for his reappearance too.
اصل زور همینه، اصل غلبه فئه قلیله بر فئه کثیر است.
The age of reappearance is exactly like this. This age is the age of victory of few against many. So many other victories are still on the way, and all these victories against the so-called bullies of the world pave the way for the reappearance of Imam al-Mahdi ajalallah. In this way, martyrdom and sacrifice is the prelude to final victory. As we read in the Holy Quran, in the heart of hardships, there exists ease. We grow up through all these hardships, and in this way, we prepare ourselves for the final mission, which is serving Imam al-Mahdi when he reappears. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Mirbagheri. To find out more about this program, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
You kill in the name of freedom. You kill in the name of democracy. You kill in the name of God. But not in my name will you kill. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched. Driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for prime position to have all under your thumb. Not in my name will you fight. against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation. I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name. Not in our name.
Thank you for joining us this hour. The Israeli aggression on Syria and the exploitation of events in Suwaida, as well as the situation in the Gaza Strip, the ongoing negotiations for a ceasefire, Western pressure on Iran, and Israeli attacks on Lebanon. These topics were addressed in the Hebrew media, and we discussed them today with Dr. Mohammed Qasem, writer and political analyst. Hello and welcome. The Israeli aggression on Syria against the backdrop of the Suwaida events was a central focus in Hebrew media, where commentators argued that the occupation army is unlikely to escalate significantly in Syria after the attack on the vicinity of the presidential palace and general staff headquarters in Damascus. Well, Dr. Mohammed, to begin with, do you think that Israel wants to normalize with Syria, or it wants to see it as a weak state?
First of all, we have to know that before Julani came to the authority, there were discussions between him and the Turks and the Israelis with the Americans. They have to normalize when he puts hand on the authority. So now Shara is, or Julani is, trying his best now to settle his authority, his power on the land, although there might be some troubles from here and there. And everybody knows that there is a kind of a conflict between the powers of Turkey and Israel, who is to control and where. The Turkish had taken the northern part and the eastern one, and the Israelis are controlling Golan Heights and Jebel Sheikh and some other areas. That's why, if we take it into consideration, we know that Israeli does want a kind of normalization, but they know that now it's not ripe yet. It's not ready for that. That's why...
Is it because they believe that the normalization will step in the way of their expansionist plans? Once they normalize with Syria, they wouldn't be able to actually...
In these days, they want to weaken the Syrians more than they had done after the... toppling of Assad, and when they destroyed and demolished all the military powers and facilities of the Syrian army. So Israel doesn't want a comprehensive agreement now. It's a comprehensive agreement because they are unable to do that. They want Syria as a weakened, as resilient, as fragmented. That's why, because they know that Julani is not Bashar al-Assad.
So they don't want to normalize?
No, not now. They want it later. They want it later, but when they assure that Syria will be under or submitted to the
weakened
to the maximum.
Israeli social media reacted to the Israeli aggression on Syria, and here are some of the comments.
Shai Mizrahi, hot-headed Druze in Syria were killed by Syrian security forces, and now the Druze are tasting revenge. Urid Zidik, far from the moral excuse of preventing a massacre against the Druze, Israel prefers Syria to be weak and divided, with autonomous rule from minorities. Doron Blum, I wouldn't be surprised if the movement of al-Julani elements toward Jabal al-Druze in Suwaida was coordinated with Netanyahu.
Well, prolonging the war on the Gaza Strip and intensifying resistance operations will be disastrous for all Israelis. Victory over Hamas and killing its last fighter is a deadly illusion that will never be achieved. This is what a former chief of staff of the occupation army said. Do you agree that Hamas' strength lie in the material factors such as money and distribution aid?
Let me have a little time for this because it's very critical. No, not only in material factors, money, weapons, and so on. Because if we would take into consideration, first of all, the material funding or the material support, we have to take into consideration its ideological and religious appeal, the first thing. And the commitment of the Gazans that they will keep fighting till the liberation of Gaza. So this is an ideology, it's a belief which the Israelis are not yet ready to understand. The second one is that they have the ability for the operational authority. They are leading this one. They are not making a response. They are acting initiatives.
You think the Israelis doesn't understand that?
They understand, but they cannot control it. And in other hands, they said it themselves that they have Hamas still has 20,000
fighters.
Even if you have finished these 20,000, you will have new members, 20,000 again. That's why they do not understand also that the Hamas has the political legitimacy. They have the political legitimacy because they have been elected. And they are leading the Gaza by elections. So they have also this within them, they have this power. Plus, they have the symbol of defiance, the Hamas, as well as the resistance in Lebanon.
Yes.
This motivation from inside every member of them, not only leaders, and you have noticed that they have lost many, many leaders, but the fighting is still going on. Operations are still moving on. That's why we have to take into consideration the methods, the ideology, and the support that are taking from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Hamas now is, although it is sieged or it is surrounded by enemies, but it has a very wide support all over the world.
Yes.
And this is also Hamas knows that and also uses this for the...
Are you speaking about the global protest,
of course,
Dr.
Of course,
Muhammad?
Of course, mass media all over the world. This is also...
So in your opinion, Israel did not realize that they're fighting an ideology rather than fighting soldiers?
They are fighting all these together, but they are unable to control most of these factors. They can block them. They can make a siege. They can destroy hospitals. They can, but they cannot destroy the spirit. They cannot destroy the tunnels. They cannot destroy the ideology, the motivation, the will of fighting. These are the spirit of the.
Yeah, but this means that Israel is in a dilemma because you can never overcome an idea.
Of course, of course. If we take
or conquer an idea.
If we take the area of Gaza, it is less than what had been occupied in the south of Syria. And they have been to the Julan Heights and to Jebel Sheikh and to other places, which are more and wider than Gaza as we take it in area. But the difference is that the people here are not the same people there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Of course, now moving on to the issue of suicide within the ranks of the Israeli army, which is worsening with the continuation of the genocide and war on the Gaza Strip. An Israeli psychological expert spoke about the suffering of soldiers inside Gaza and the mental illnesses they suffer due to the horrors of war. Three suicides in 10 days is not a small number, is it?
Four. They had already
according
found,
to the report, it's three in 10 days.
Three, and now they have found one who had killed himself.
This morning?
Said. Yeah, that's
okay.
It. Here also we have to take into consideration the spirit of the Israeli soldiers and the spirit of Hamas soldiers.
Yes.
Well, if we make a kind of comparison, there with Hamas, there are motivations, ideology, their lands, their freedom, their lives, their country, and so on. The soldiers of Israel, they came to Israel. They thought that they are coming to heaven, and they thought that they will live in peace and without any troubles and so on.
Mm-hmm.
With this war, it seems that the soldiers who are not used to see these or to have experience in such things had found many things. First of all, the horror of war. You know, war is not something easy to go.
Yes.
For a soldier who is 20 years, 25 years, or 23 years, and so on. So the other form is that the war now has taken place from house to house. It's not escalation.
But this is not the first that the Israelis go to war with Hamas.
Not this way.
Guerrilla warfare.
Yeah, guerrilla, but not house to house, not facing each other directly. Now they have been for months now. The Hamas is going from down. They are bombing houses and they are
and tanks.
Tanks and so on. Plus, this soldier is not used to hear the screaming children or women who are wounded or having their children dead and they are screaming, crying and so on, or wounded people who are also suffering of their wounds, and how did they see this whole destruction and demolishing of houses?
Mm-hmm.
These are the Israeli soldiers are
scenes that they're not accustomed to. You're highlighting
are human beings.
Okay, but do you see this issue as being related only to the horrors of war
that you are highlighting,
Doctor? Or is it due to the loss of trust? And that's very important, not only in the army, but also in the soldier.
I have two things still to say that. First of all, they are having they have moral injury because they are not used to break such moralities they are raised to. Second, the loss of trust of the army and the leaders.
You know, the state.
Of course, Israeli state and the army. And they have the lack of support when they fall in a place where nobody is helping them and so on, no support and no something like that. They feel that they are seeing death in front of them. That's why it makes them war trauma. And this leads to suicide for such people. But did you hear any of Hamas's military people commit suicide, or Lebanon, or Yemen, or something? We see only with these who were obliged, not I don't want to say obliged, but they had been forced to go to war. And if they had the chance to leave the war, they would not say no. That's why they come to an extent that they cannot suppress this depression, this fear, this terror, this screaming, the sounds, the images, the houses.
It's similar to the Vietnam experience to the Americans.
That's it. The Americans had seen such a thing. And also, up till now, there are hospitals in the United States for those who had war trauma. Up till now, they are.
So it's an endless cycle.
Of course. Such war, when you have When an Israeli soldier who came from Lithuania or who came from Russia or come from other places,
yes,
he says, why I'm sacrificing my life for what? Mm-hmm. I left my country and I was living there in peace, and I'm coming here to live more peacefully, and I'm seeing death now, and I'm facing death. Mm-hmm. So this also causes, and this is very, very, it will be more and more if it continues in the same way.
Okay. Moving on to the Iranian issue, where Hebrew media addressed the American and European threats to reactivate the snap-back mechanism and reimpose sanctions on Iran that were lifted by the UN after 2015 nuclear deal. Do you think if no deal will be reached by the end of August, sanctions will be reimposed on Iran and Israel might initiate another attack?
I think that the end of August they will not reach to an agreement, and there will be no strike. It means that
why?
First of all, the United States is in need of having the relation between Iran, United States, Iran with the Middle East, and the complexity of the Middle East now. What's going on in Syria, what's going on in Lebanon, what's going on, all these together, they consider that the deadline is not the time enough that they can come to an agreement with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Trump, as he is trying to calm down Netanyahu wants to strike Iran today before tomorrow, because he feels that the threat is from Iran, especially after he had at least limited the power of Lebanon, the Lebanese resistance. The Syria now is aside. There are no rockets coming to Lebanon. Syria is not Bashar al-Assad today, and so on. And they are striking Yemen, and they did not achieve their objectives. But Iran is still powerful. They know that Iran is still powerful, and it has a very great amount of uranium, which is enough for them to threaten, not as a nuclear.
So the Israelis and the Americans still disagree on this?
The Israelis want it today, as I said.
Okay.
But I think Trump doesn't want it. Because Trump
he might want it later, you mean?
He wanted if he is pushing the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want you to, as he did Trump now, he said, I will escalate against Russia, and said to the Europeans, let's go and escalate and let's send weapons and rockets and so on to Ukraine. But you Europeans had to fund this.
Mm.
But with Iran, it's not the same. With Iran, it's quite different. They are now trying. They thought first that they had demolished the atomic purification.
Energy, yes.
So after that, they found that what Iran did by hiding its amount
uranium.
Of uranium.
Yes, yes.
It's hidden in a safe place.
Okay.
And still ready to fight, ready, and it seems that they are unable to break the will of the Iranians, and they had found the power of the Iranians when they...
Retaliation
against Israel and the mm-hmm. destruction that fell
okay.
on the Israel. That's why I think it is now, it's not enough for them that by the end of August there will be another war.
Okay, moving on to the Israeli attacks on Lebanon, amid the ceasefire agreement, especially the recent attack on the Bekaa region in eastern Lebanon, which received significant attention in the Hebrew media. To what extent will the Israeli aggression on Lebanon go, Dr. Muhammad?
The goals today are the two goals today.
Yes.
First of all, they are aiming to weaken Hezbollah and without triggering an all-over war. This is one. The second one is that they see that the Lebanese inside now, they had a conflict within. Let us that go on to see what goes on. But they are still terrified of the power of the resistance of Lebanon. This is what we conclude, that the Israelis now are trying to trigger Hezbollah to retaliate, that they can have a reason for more attack against Lebanon.
Okay.
And this, I think, will come to an end when, nobody knows, this it comes to the resistance when they will retaliate.
Decide. Okay, Dr. Mohammed Qasim, writer and political analyst, thank you very much for joining us in this episode.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
In the name of Allah, Salam. So welcome, this is another episode of Lantern. So we have a new story and a lot to hear about that and, of course, learn about that. On the continuation of this program, Lantern, we have a new story to listen to. The title of our story is Tyrant Needs No Excuse. A fox was drinking water from a stream on a mountaintop when he noticed that downstream in a valley, a young lamb was drinking from the same stream. The fox trotted down the stream and came up to the lamb. The fox sought an excuse to seize the lamb and said, "You're drinking from my stream. You're polluting the water that I drink. How can I pollute the water for you, oh fox?" protested the lamb. "I am down in the valley and you drink upstream in the mountains." The fox was taken aback because the lamb was telling the truth. He needed a different excuse to pounce on the lamb. "3 months ago, I was sound asleep under a tree. You made so much noise with your baa that it woke me up and you ruined my day," said the fox. "How could I wake you up 3 months ago when I'm only 2 months old?" answered the little lamb. Now the fox was at a loss. Logic was not on his side. He needed some other alibi to complete his sly plan. "It must have been your uncle who was shouting baa and kept me awake." So saying, the fox pounced on the little lamb, caught him in his powerful jaw, and dragged him into the bush. A tyrant needs no excuse for his tyranny.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Lantern from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain religious stories and then try to shed light and talk about some of the religious points and lessons that we can take out of them. Well, today we intend to talk about the ruling and governing a society with tyranny. You know, in the rich tradition of Islamic thought, the concepts of leadership and justice holds paramount importance. You know, the divine guidance emphasizes justice and righteousness and compassion as fundamental qualities of a legitimate ruler. Conversely, tyranny and oppression and injustice and the unlawful usurpation of authority is vehemently condemned, and they are regarded as a grave deviation from the divine path. This perspective is reinforced through the numerous narrations from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and the Quranic verses, which collectively underscore the spiritual and societal perils of tyranny. One of the most profound sayings from Imam Ali alayhi salam encapsulates this stance in the government, and he says that a government will stay with heresy but not with tyranny. You know, this hadith highlights a critical distinction. Heresy in the context of governance might persist temporarily, but it is ultimately transient. In contrast, tyranny, an oppressive and unjust rule, is fundamentally incompatible with divine justice and will inevitably lead to societal chaos and divine punishment. You know, this very beautiful statement of Imam Ali alayhi salam emphasizes that tyranny corrupts the very essence of Islamic governance, which is rooted in justice or adl and adherence to divine law. In Islamic theology, justice is a central attribute of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and rulers are entrusted with their responsibility to uphold justice among people. The Holy Book of Quran explicitly condemns tyranny and injustice and says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم والله لا يحب الظالمين. Indeed, Allah does not like the transgressors. Surah Ali Imran, verse number 140. And again, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala states in his book and says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ولا تصعر خدك للناس ولا تمشي في الأرض مرحا إن الله لا يحب كل مختال فخور. And do not turn your face away from people in arrogance, nor walk in pride on the earth. Indeed, Allah does not like the arrogant and boastful. Surah Al-Luqman, verse number 18. The Holy Book of Quran warns against oppressing others and commands rulers to govern fairly. Tyranny, which involves unjustly seizing their rights and oppresses their weak and disregards the divine commandments, it directly contravenes the divine principles of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, let's go for a short break and we will be back in no time.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspect of our life.
Welcome back to your audience. We are talking about tyranny and its influences on the society and how much condemned it is in our religion of Islam. Well, the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam further emphasizes the destructive nature of tyranny. Imam Ali alayhi salam often spoke out against oppressive rulers and unjust authorities. He said, "The worst of rulers are those who oppress their subjects and cause corruption." Or again, he said, the more oppressive a ruler is, the more he distances himself from divine mercy. You know, Imam Ali's own life also exemplifies standing against tyranny. You know, his exemplary leadership was grounded in justice, compassion, and adherence to divine law. And he contrasted sharply with tyrannical rulers. Tyranny does not only damage the individual rights, you know, it also corrodes societal morals and spiritual health of the society. The teachings of the Holy Book of Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam also reinforce that justice, compassion, adherence to divine law are foundations of legitimate leadership and tyranny corrupts societal morals, and it invites the divine punishment and undermines the very fabric of Islamic society. Okay, well, dear listeners, that was the time we had for this episode of Lantern. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Ana bi dhikrillahi tatma'innu al-qulub.
Just as they were walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. To know you, whoever you are, laugh with you, learn from you, open to you my heart. But soon when I say goodbye and move on, I'm a traveler just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. While I'm here, kind of neighbor who prays for you and me. The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me. There for you, a shoulder to turn to. I'm a traveler just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return. To know you, I've learned so much.
Been a pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Remember me, so I might be with you.
as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return, waiting to return, return to my Lord.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the men who prayed with shoes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z, here on I'm Being Betrayed with me, Sister Zainab. And so obviously, so the men who prayed with shoes. So this refers to a particular story in the life of the one of the most famous martyrs of the Holy Defence, Dr. Mustafa Chamran. And so obviously there's a little story. It goes, this is when Dr. Chamran was defence minister. And he had actually asked for a group of motorcyclists to be invited to also be present in these efforts at the war front. So this is obviously when the war for Holy Defence had already commenced. So this group of motorcyclists had been brought to the Prime Minister's office where Dr. Chamran was also working. And someone in the office, when they saw these motorcyclists, they asked, why have they been brought here? And then so Dr. Chamran sort of entered, and or rather he was called. And then he went round and he embraced, hugged the men one by one. And this particular group of people, it was observed that they didn't have the sort of best etiquette maybe, or the best knowledge. Let's say they weren't best in performing some of the acts of worship, for example. Many of them initially were praying with their shoes on. However, Dr. Chamran had such an effect on them that all changed. And so obviously, so what is this? So what I'm saying here is that obviously there's several lessons in there, and I'll start maybe with one of the lessons. The first lesson is obviously that Dr. Chamran was able to have such an impact on people that he could, in a sense, sort of get into their heart and have a real impact on their heart. And obviously, we know that Allah is the turner of hearts, but at the same time, we know that any capacity that, for example, let's say the imams, the prophets, and then our dear martyrs have, obviously these are capacities that are given to them by the grace of Allah. And obviously Dr. Chamran was for sure one of these people. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm Being Betrayed with me, Sister Zainab. And I'm talking about this idea that there are people out there, such as our martyrs, who can have a profound impact on the way people behave. So in a sense, sort of get into their heart and make changes there. And of course, as I already said, this is always by the grace of Allah. There's not one person in the world who is able to do anything without the grace of Allah, and especially when it comes to having an impact on another person's heart. And so obviously this is just one thing, these profound abilities that people have. And we all know, obviously we're not talking about people such as our martyrs, but maybe we all know people in our surroundings and families, in our friendship groups, who really have such beautiful akhlaq that just being with them, and you maybe notice this, if you spend time with certain people who, even though they might be going through huge hardships themselves, maybe they're going through huge stress in their workplace, and maybe you talk about this when you meet up and you hang out, but at the same time, when you've been together with that
person. Maybe it's one of your closest friends. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's a colleague or even a manager you really respect. But, you know, when you come away from having met with them, it's as if you're sort of infused again just with a sort of positivity, with light, with calmness. And this is it. And there are people like that amongst us. And obviously what I would recommend is that if you have people like that around you, just stick close to them. Make sure you spend as much time as possible with them, because, you know, we all need to have that experience. We all need to have the light in our heart sort of maintained and rekindled, even if it's just with hanging out with some of these beautiful people who remind us of Allah, basically. And that's what it's about. So inshallah, you've gained hopefully some reminders of some of the beautiful people in your surroundings. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IRB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Thank you for joining us. You are listening to Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran I invite you to listen to. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in the heaven. The best food according to Quran is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week. The month of Ramadan is the best month of the year, and the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in Surah Al-Qadr. We are in the studio of Iran Radio with a full slate of engaging content, meaningful dialogue, and stories that stay with you long after the broadcast ends. So wherever you are, make yourself at home. You're just getting started. First, you'll hear more of our expertly crafted radio productions. Next is Youth Station. Following that, we bring you powerful insights from leaders' speech. Listen to English translations of selected statements and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on various occasions, a source of profound wisdom. Then join us as we go round the world with reporters. Our correspondents from across the globe will bring you fascinating reports on a variety of subjects from their regions, offering a unique global perspective. So don't go anywhere. Up next is another segment of our radio productions.